Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
I can't believe it. And the other thing that's really gotten me crazy is Donald Trump just took down Truth Social posts. He is a former president. He's a candidate for president. It kind of, in a weird way, makes sense. I mean, we've all had to take down Facebook posts. Facebook took them down for us. If we said the wrong thing about COVID, if we say the wrong thing about the election of 2020, see how many likes, see how many new followers you get, or more accurately, how many followers you lose. The First Amendment used to be so precious in America, so paramount, so unassailable, and now you have a judge, Mershon, throwing it out and walking all over it. Mr. Happy, one of our favorite lawyers here. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm well, thanks.
Did you hear what the judge did? He just held Trump in contempt. The fine is $9,000.
Yes.
He's threatening to put him in jail, and he's fear-mongering this guy.
Mm.
The objective is, I do believe, and I've been reading all these transcripts, you know, he wants people to believe the MAGA mob of January 6th will come for my witnesses, will come for the witnesses if Donald Trump keeps criticizing the case. That is totally tipping the scale. That's totally unfair. And I just can't believe this is happening.
Well, you have a very good point. And I did read the article today and looked at the citation. My first reaction when I read it was that he needs to appeal to the appellate division.
He can do that now?
Yes, because it's been a, I don't know the exact when. I think he can, because it's effective immediately, and generally you can't appeal anything until the case is over. It's just one shot at it. But in something like this, I believe that he could appeal it. It won't stop the trial. Nothing will really happen, but it would go up for review before he'd have to pay the $9,000. Of course, the $9,000 isn't the issue with Trump. I'm sure he can afford it. But the question is the limits of the gag order. And gag orders are kind of unusual in the law, particularly in criminal cases. They occasionally happen when judges are concerned that a jury might be influenced on reading the paper or listening to something on the radio.
They're not supposed to be.
They're not supposed to do that at all, but, you know, let's face it, you can't really control a jury when they leave the courthouse and go home. And they're not supposed to talk to anybody about the case. They're not supposed to read anything. But reality is they do. So a gag order is to avoid having some kind of extrajudicial bias that's created by statements made by people in the trial.
Oh,
but
brother.
It's only like 1 in 1,000 cases that this is even contemplated by a court to have a gag order. Very rare.
Wow, and he's throwing it around. I mean, let's face it. Gag order doesn't sound right. Gag order. Who's gagged in America?
It's a little different when you're on trial in a criminal case and you have such visibility that, let's just say in a pure situation where a jury is potentially affected by things that are said out of court, that is not due process. It's not due process for the prosecutor or even the defendant. If you can imagine a prosecutor making mean comments, the defendant testified today and he was lying on the stand, and that could influence a jury.
Well, that's the state. This is a defendant. This is the accused. And it's not about
It's
in this system, it's not about the rights of the prosecution. It's about the rights of the people, right? I mean,
well,
fair enough.
The prosecutor is supposed to be representing
the people, right?
So, no, it does have that. The prosecutor is representing the people. And then, of course, the defense is defending the individual. They both have rights. Everybody's entitled to a trial that's free of bias and extrajudicial. I've had cases where there might be, for example, a collapse of a building at a site, and jurors on their own go and drive over and look at the site.
Oh, they can't do that.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
And that if that comes out, there's a mistrial because they're not supposed to be looking at things that aren't presented in court. If you want to have a view of something, then everybody rides with the judge and both lawyers are there and it's done properly. gag orders are to avoid that from an oral standpoint. There shouldn't be things out in permeating the air that would somehow influence a juror if they read it.
I'm looking at Trump. He's going back into court. He shakes his fist, you know, in that way he does.
Yes.
He's back in court with his team, and he's followed by, there's Eric Trump, his son, and his Jason Miller, Emile Bove, his one of his defense counsels, great people, all. And this thing, look, the whole damn thing is a sham. And I think Mr. Happy, you agree with me?
I'm not so sure. I think it's a dual look. It's a really difficult case for anybody to take the ex-president of the United States, particularly somebody like Donald Trump, and put him on the stand for technicalities. And what bothers me much more really than the gag order, and if I were Trump's attorney, what I would focus on is there's 36 counts. Each of those is a misdemeanor. The only way they can turn it into a felony is saying that he intended to commit a crime.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
But the crime they're saying he intended to commit is a misdemeanor, too. So
Wait. I know that the falsifying business records, that's considered a misdemeanor.
Right.
What I forgot now. What the other crime they're accusing him of doing
is
what?
It's election fraud. Election, not following the law with respect to elections.
And the election thing is so hard
to... And it's a misdemeanor.
That's a misdemeanor.
That's a misdemeanor, too. So how do you make 36 and 1... There's 37 misdemeanors. How do you turn that into a felony? That takes a tricky process. And my experience with jurors is that they don't buy things like that. It's like a double whammy. It's hard to convince them that 36 misdemeanors equal felony when the charge is that the bad thing he did is a misdemeanor, too. To me, that's the big weakness of the case. It's very, very hard, in my opinion, to convince a jury of that.
I want to give you a little piece of information I heard this morning from a friend of mine who was a prospective juror yesterday in another proceeding, right?
In the same courthouse.
In the same courthouse, the same jury pool, New York County, Manhattan. They go there for jury duty, and they make them watch this movie about bias, right?
Right.
And the person, the officer there, I don't know if it was a uniformed officer, but some court employee said, all right, this is all about bias training, and we got to make sure we don't have bias, except when it comes to President Trump, and we all know he's guilty. And everybody,
oh my goodness.
And everybody laughs. The prospective jurors.
They meant that as a joke, I guess.
Yeah, but that is one hell of a joke for a court employee. Imagine if
That's shocking. That's totally inappropriate.
And is it, I mean, that individual was presiding over jury selection, or helping with it at least, 2 weeks ago for this case.
Oh, well, that's very bad. But of course, he probably didn't say anything like that when the jury was being picked.
But if that's the mentality, and they're trying to look, all this stuff, all this scheming against Trump that they have been doing for years now, since before he came down the escalator, I just don't think that they're going to leave it to the jury to figure it out. And I have suspicions about the jurors, how they were selected, how those notifications went out. The entire deep state, you don't have to agree with me, but there are a lot of powerful interests that want Trump out right now. And they orchestrated all of this crazy stuff that's never been done before. I don't think they just sent jury notices out randomly 3 weeks ago when they were looking for people to show up. Do you?
I can't answer that because it would be so inappropriate and such a violation of law to selectively send out jury notices. And they do it quite a bit in advance. It would be more than 3 weeks ago. The jury pools are put together several months in advance.
But so, when you think about it in the way I just addressed it,
yeah, like,
you know, you've got, they have, they're moving heaven and earth to get Trump, you know, from Jack Smith
no
and
question.
All this weird stuff that they're doing. It's logical to me that they would have put some forethought into the timing and who we notify, how we notify. I'm not saying we'll ever get to prove that or whatever, but.
Well, it's hard. Courthouses are made up of a lot of individual employees that are not highly paid, that aren't really there for political reasons, that are there when politicians come and go. The courthouse employees are still there, and they talk a lot. So if something like that was to go on, it would be at the water cooler or at the coffee pot. They would be talking about it.
Yeah.
And this is such a sensitive case that such a thing would just destroy the prosecution case on appeal. And undoubtedly, Trump, to me, is doing two things. One, he's using it as best he can for political reasons. If he was jailed, it'd probably help him and the polls, because it would be cast as a political jailing, which probably would help him. But at the end of the day, this is going to end up in the appellate division or then to the Court of Appeals, because whatever happens here has got a high element of legal sufficiency about it.
Bottom line, what's your take on the judge, Judge Mershon?
I think he's got his hands full.
Well, I know, but look, the other day I heard him sustain an objection when somebody called him Mr. President and they objected and said he's not president. He wasn't president in 2015.
I saw that too, and that seems too rigid.
Unbelievably petty.
I think we always call ex-presidents Mr. President. Yeah. I'm sure no matter whether it was Bill Clinton or Obama, that you still call him Mr. President. So I did feel as though that was going a little far when the judge did that.
At least they're letting Donald Trump go to Barron's graduation. That's nice. Nelson Happy, always a privilege talking to you, sir. Oh, wait a second. Finally, didn't you teach at Columbia?
I went to Columbia Law School, and I did teach a seminar there in trial practice many years ago.
What do you think? I mean, my gosh, what the hell?
Well, I graduated in 67, which was the year before the 68 disaster.
Yeah.
And I've lived because I love Columbia, and it was a wonderful influence on my life, and I feel very close to what it at the university. But it took 10 or 15 years for Columbia to recover from the 1968 sit-in and riot that happened there. Unfortunately, Columbia is going to have the same tarnish, and it took a change of presidents of the university in order to overcome it. And my heart goes out to Columbia, but the thing that's cool about Columbia's in New York City, where things are happening, and it's the epicenter for everything. So riots and dissension and all that happens in New York City. So to me, Columbia is the preeminent university in New York, so this is why it happens at Columbia. If it wasn't such a important university, it wouldn't have the same publicity.
Well, Ray Kelly, the former police commissioner who was there at Columbia, I believe, in 1968, will be joining us in just a couple of minutes to tell us exactly what should be done right now. Nelson Happy, attorney at law. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Be right back.
Greg Kelly.